You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. While many businesses, schools, and events are closed because of the coronavirus pandemic, Wisconsin state parks and trails remain open. Coming up, DNR Secretary Preston Cole tells us how we can enjoy nature safely, why we should visit a state park, and we'll take your recommendations on the best local parks to visit. Now, Congress passed and President Trump signed a historic $2 trillion aid package last week as part of the federal response to economic damage from the novel coronavirus. The package includes one-time $1,200 payments for many Americans, and businesses can get tax credits worth thousands of dollars for every worker they keep on the payroll. Senator Tammy Baldwin joins us now. She's a Democrat representing Wisconsin in the U.S. Senate. Senator Baldwin, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you. Thanks.
There's a lot in this package. Let's take it piece by piece, starting with unemployment benefits. This is a sticking point, an 11th-hour sticking point. What ended up coming out of this that you see as important?
Well, we understand that this pandemic requires a lot of people to not work. If you work at a place where people congregate, if you work in settings like schools, et cetera, where the disease could spread, fighting it, bending the curve, as they say, requires people to socially distance, self-isolate, telework if you can. But we've seen with the unemployment figures in the state of Wisconsin over the past week, 222,000 workers have filed for unemployment in our state. That's just broken all records. And so we knew that this was going to be a key piece of making sure that people can remain safe and secure and not showing up to workplaces. So the improvements that were made are very significant. The federal government will add $600 per week to the state maximum unemployment insurance benefit. The time period has been extended to 4 months. And we've added a group of employees who have never really had access to unemployment insurance before. You know, think of the gig workers who are present throughout our economy now, or people who are freelancers and independent contractors. This is now going to be available for them. But you're right, there was a 11th hour disagreement, mostly around the issue that every state operates its unemployment insurance in a federal-state partnership, and customizing the rules for each state from the federal level was going to be technologically impossible. And so that's why these are across-the-board extensions and expansions that we'll see throughout the United States.
Is there aid specifically for farmers here in Wisconsin in this package?
You know, one of my regrets is that there is not the type of robust agricultural piece of this measure. Now, there are certainly many things that farmers could apply for, people in rural Wisconsin could apply for. You know, they are small businesses, et cetera. However, there are some other disruptions in particularly our dairy economy that I think many of us saw coming. We fought to try to include in this latest measure assistance to negotiate through those issues, and we're not able to get that inserted into the bill. We're already working if there is and when there is an additional response to have that dealt with more robustly.
We're talking to U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin, looking at the federal response to the coronavirus pandemic. You mentioned small businesses, and there's a lot of aid for small businesses, some for larger businesses. What did you think of the final mix of business supports in this package?
Well, this is the largest rescue package for small businesses that we've ever seen. And, you know, you think about how disproportionately hit small businesses are when many have storefronts and main streets across the state, and have had to close because of the orders on safer at home and social distancing and not being able to host places where people congregate. Now, we know that it's really, really tough for those businesses to temporarily close down and keep everyone on payroll and pay the rent and the utilities and everything else. And so it's been a time of great anxiety for those that have forced to close or have seen, let's say, 50% or more of their regular revenue disappear because of the epidemic. So what we've done is put together assistance that at every turn tries to encourage small business owners to keep their staff on payroll. If you furlough them but continue the benefits, the employees will be able to apply for the unemployment insurance. But the reason we want to keep everybody on payroll is if they do offer benefits, we want to make sure that those are not interrupted. And the loans that are available for small businesses will actually convert to grants, essentially. In other words, lots of the loan can be forgiven if the small business is able to keep folks on their payroll, maybe furlough, but it, you know, even if possible, to continue payroll up to 8 weeks, I believe, of an employee's pay can be forgiven if a loan is taken out in order to keep them on.
Stepping away from the stimulus or the economic recovery bill, a lot of people concerned about medical supplies, things like ventilators, personal protective equipment for first responders, hospitals, and elsewhere. Governor Evers saying we're having trouble. We need more help from the federal government. What are you looking at?
Well, as you said, Governor Evers has requested these supplies. And this week, I led the entire Wisconsin congressional delegation in supporting the governor and calling on FEMA to immediately respond to this request and send those supplies to Wisconsin. Now, we have seen a shipment come in, that's sort of breaking news, yet it is not going to be sufficient to meet the needs. The other thing that is really frustrating to me, because this latest measure provides $16 billion to replenish the national stockpile, the strategic national stockpile of medical supplies, and yet we're not seeing those orders being placed to assure us that all the folks who have stepped up to create products that weren't available only a couple of weeks ago, to make masks that are the N95 masks, which are important for healthcare workers to have, but other supplies. And so we really do need to see that ramp up also. Or else we're going to have, bidding wars between states and localities. And so this is a key part of it, is they're emptying the stockpile. I've heard that supplies are now dangerously low. Okay, let's get the federal government more involved in making those orders to replenish the stockpile, because we're going to need it.
We got a question from a listener, Louisa from Menominee, wondering if there will be any unemployment or financial aid to people who are on Social Security. If so, is this something they would need to do to get the benefits, even if they don't have a computer? Anything that would affect people, Louisa asked, on Social Security, Senator Baldwin.
Yes, well, I'm really glad that question was asked, because there's actually bad news, good news in it. So the good news is that, yes, people on Social Security are eligible for the direct payment. This is the one-time $1,200 payment to individuals and members of families. The bill that we passed specifically said the IRS must work with the Social Security Administration in order to locate those on Social Security who might not have filed a tax form last year because their income was sufficiently low that they had no tax obligation. They were supposed to work that out, and the IRS has announced today that they are not doing so and that they will require people who didn't file a tax return last year to do so or to file a tax return this year in order to collect that direct payment. And so I have there's a couple of things that need to happen. One is we need to assist people with accurate information on how they do that. And secondly, I'm still fighting to have the IRS try once again to work with the Social Security Administration to do this without making people go through that extra hassle, frankly, of filing a tax return that wasn't required of them in the first place.
Looking to the future, Senator Baldwin, President Trump floated the idea of another, a phase four infrastructure spending. Speaker Pelosi said maybe $600 million some dollars in infrastructure spending. What are you looking at in a hypothetical phase four of coronavirus-related spending?
Well, frankly, a major infrastructure project package has been a priority of mine for many, many years, predating the Trump administration, because we know that we're falling behind. And you don't have to drive very far in Wisconsin to find real evidence of our failure to maintain and our failure to keep up. And so I know at home this is a really, really big issue. I think as a matter of economic stimulus that it can be a very, very important and valuable dimension of getting us up and going after the worst of this pandemic has passed. And so, but I would have been supporting that regardless of the presence of the pandemic. We have an infrastructure deficit in this nation, and it's just as real as, frankly, any sort of government deficit.
Senator Baldwin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. She joined us today to talk about what's in the $2 trillion aid package passed by Congress and signed into law by President Trump last week. For another perspective on the federal stimulus efforts, tune into Central Time tomorrow for a conversation with Republican U.S. Representative Brian Steil. That's tomorrow at 3:45 on Central Time. We're bringing as many members of our congressional delegation onto Central Time and the morning show as we can to talk about the federal coronavirus reaction. Coming up, we'll talk to a Wisconsin doctor who designed a device to help healthcare workers more safely test patients for COVID-19. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, a shortage of protective gear, things like masks and gloves at many Wisconsin hospitals over the past month, has made safety a concern for medical workers who are testing and treating patients for COVID-19. Our next guest decided to do what she could do to help by inventing some equipment of her own, a portable desktop droplet barrier that lets someone interact with the patient while still protected by sleeves and a plexiglass window. That design is now being manufactured and shipped to multiple clinics in the state and beyond. Dr. Allison Craig is a pediatrician and the chief of staff for Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin. Dr. Craig, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Can you talk about your inspiration for coming up with this design for this protective equipment?
My inspiration was simply necessity. We, in our preparation for the COVID-19 pandemic, were receiving some concerning news about our supplies of our personal protective equipment. And as my anxiety increased about our supply, I started feeling the need to be creative with our resources and creative about our strategies of protecting our healthcare workers.
Describe for us, paint us a picture if you can of this desktop droplet barrier that you came up with.
Yeah, so On the morning, I haven't been really sleeping all that well because of just having like of active, like thinking about like, what can we do? And so I woke up early one morning and I was on the internet scanning the news, as I think many people have been lately. And I was looking at some photos of healthcare providers in South Korea. And I came up upon a picture of a healthcare provider who had their arms through two holes in a glass or plexiglass shield, and they were holding lab samples. And I was looking at this photo and thinking, hey, that's something we could probably do. And so that morning I came into our incident command center and I reached out to our chief medical officer and our facilities manager, and I showed them the picture and I said, hey, do you think we could do something like this? And within a day, our facilities manager walked into our incident command with this essentially piece of plexiglass that is stood on a piece of shelving. And he was able to drill circular holes about 6 inches, two of them. And I had recently replaced a light above my stove. And I remember that they had these like spring attached fixture around the light bulb. And we were able to fit that with a sleeve, a protective plastic sleeve, so that the provider could be on the clean side of the plexiglass and reach through the sleeve to the patient and collect a sample on the patient side without risk of droplet contamination.
And this is a very specific problem for our coronavirus testing, as I understand it, because if you're testing me, you're putting a swab in my nose, and my natural response might be to sneeze straight back at you. This plexiglass shield is going to be a huge difference maker, potentially, in that case.
Yeah, so I think that it is right now. It's kind of an it's like an extra droplet protection. So we have surgical masks, we have N95 masks, we have gowns, and we have face shields. But we are concerned that even with those protective that protective equipment, that droplets could still splatter on the provider, the healthcare worker's body, essentially. And so having this plexiglass shield allows for that like extra precaution that we think is necessary. Now, there's a lot of talk about whether or not COVID-19 is also spread through aerosols, which are smaller particles of airborne particles that linger in the air a little bit longer than droplets. But for the most part, especially the time that this idea came up, which was about 2 weeks ago, the real focus was on preventing droplets first and foremost, and then also having extra protections for airborne particles.
We're talking to Dr. Allison Craig, Chief of Staff for Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, about a new piece of personal protective equipment she came up with for doctors. And Dr. Craig, the idea itself is exciting. But what's really exciting is what happened next. You put this idea out into the public and people ran with it, improving it. Can you talk about the kind of response you got?
Yeah, it was very inspirational. So I brought this idea to my colleagues and coworkers, and we were able to mock up our first prototype. And in that process, I decided to do a little video so I could explain to my colleagues how to use the prototype. And when I got home that night, I thought, hey, you know, that video was not bad. Maybe it'll spark some other ideas and other innovative thinking. So I just, for the first time, uploaded a video to YouTube and linked it to my other social media. And from that, I started getting a lot of responses, a lot of encouragement from the community, a lot of people like reaching out saying, how could they help? And people that produce the sleeves reached out to me and offered new ideas. And then we had a local group in Madison, Wisconsin that does kind of building and engineering and tinkering. And they leaned in and said, hey, how about we make you some more of your prototype? And essentially within 36 hours, they had taken our prototype photos and replicated them 9 times. And then we're able to design specs or instructions that we were able to post And then within another couple of days, a manufacturer in Rockford, Illinois, picked up the idea and improved upon it. And just today, which is only like really less than almost 14 days since the first idea started, we received six version 3 of the desktop droplet barrier that are beautiful, and we're going to deploy them in all of our clinics today.
If there's a problem solver at home listening, Dr. Craig, where can they go to find information about your design?
Yeah, so we have posted our specs on our website at www.ghcscw.com for Group Health Cooperative. And also, if people are actually interested in purchasing prefabricated models, the manufacturer in Rockford has a website, www.covidassist.net. They are willing to make these for healthcare providers across the country. In fact, there are two of them heading this weekend to Indiana, and there's been an order submitted by a physician in Chicago. So it's just really exciting to see a glimmer of an idea transitioned into something that where there is actually protective equipment being distributed across the country within like 14 days.
Dr. Craig, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much.
Dr. Allison Craig is Chief of Staff for Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin. She talked to us today about the desktop droplet barrier she made to help medical workers safely test people for COVID-19. Coming up, a lot of places are closed here in Wisconsin, but not state parks. We'll talk to DNR Secretary Preston Cole about which ones we should check out and what to keep in mind about the coronavirus when we do head out to the park. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on the morning show, meet the candidates for Wisconsin Supreme Court in this month's general election. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now, if you're feeling a little restless from being cooped up at home for the past little while, you can spend some time at one of Wisconsin's state parks. They're still open under Governor Evers' Safer at Home order, and they're waiving entrance fees for now. There are more than 60 parks and recreation areas, not to mention 44 state trails. The Department of Natural Resources says getting outdoors has both physical and mental benefits. But before you jump in the car and head on over, there are a few measures you need to be aware of to help limit the spread of COVID-19. Preston Cole is the Secretary of the Wisconsin DNR. Secretary Cole, good to have you back on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. What an exciting time it is for us to talk about state parks as a way we can calm ourselves down for the modern day circumstances the country, if not the world, finds himself in.
Well, before we get to some of the fun stuff about the state parks and some of the yellow flags before we head out, can you talk about why state parks were kept open under the Safer at Home order in the first place?
Well, Governor Evers issued the order that said outdoor recreation is an essential activity. So by proxy, outdoor recreation, parks, hunting, fishing, all those activities are in play as it relates to the state of Wisconsin. And quite frankly, many of those are in play in states around the Great Lakes as well. I believe the governor and others believe that these types of activities help us as humans, but quite frankly, it's an essential activity for public health.
To keep us safe there, the Safer at Home order says we should practice social distancing, 6 feet apart from other people, and limit groups. Can you talk about how that applies at our state parks right now?
Yeah, one of the reasons that we, you know, paid attention to making parks, no fee associated, is that people would gather at our kiosk and park there or get their entrance fee paid. So lucky for us and lucky for the public is that we're able to practice social distancing offer a waiver to fees associated with our state parks and trails and state forests. And while the buildings where our staff is may be closed, there are staff on site to go out and remind folks about social distancing, whether at our bathrooms, whether at our trailheads, where they should be practicing the governor's edict. And so, quite frankly, we are well aware of the circumstances. And quite frankly, there's on occasion it occurs and staff addresses it on a particular park.
What kind of things aren't going on at the parks right now under the Safer at Home order?
Well, our naturalists who do walks and talks with children, those activities, camping is closed at this point in time, and we'll be reevaluating that later in the spring. And, you know, it's the guided tours and those types of things that where people would congregate to listen to our naturalists, hear from others, owl prowls to nature walks, and those activities are not going on at our state parks.
When you mentioned that there'd be re-evaluations, what are you going to be weighing as whether or not people can start camping again?
Well, again, camping is something where people gather, and we have, quite frankly, showering facilities where people may line up to shower and the like. And so we have to see where the guidance comes from as it relates to not only the president, but the governor and our public health officials, to see if camping should remain in play because of the increased opportunities where social distancing may be a challenge.
Now, I know a lot of us make big plans to go on big trips to state parks. I understand the DNR is encouraging us to keep it more local right about now. What are you hoping people are doing?
Well, what a wonderful opportunity to visit some of the county parks and state parks that are in close proximity to you. And reminding folks that the governor's edict doesn't allow us to travel great distances from our home base. We think it provides a wonderful opportunity for individuals who have yet to finish some of our lesser known parks and see another park for what it's worth. And because our state parks are valuable, specifically this time of year as spring bud starts to break and wildlife begins to move around and things begin to break ground and welcoming spring back in. And so we love the notion of getting away from the tried and true parks that you've gone to and try something new within the governor's edict.
We're talking to Wisconsin DNR Secretary Preston Cole. State parks are open. They're encouraging people to go to them, but keep it safe. Ensure that you have a safe distance. Don't drive super far to go to parks. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite state park in your area, maybe a lesser known one that your neighbors might want to check out? Call in at 800-642-1234. Secretary Cole, what kind of resources are there to help us find those state parks that are, you know, not on the beaten path?
Well, I'm going to ask people to go to dnr.wi.gov, and that's the DNR website, and that provides a wonderful opportunity to look at all of our properties spread around the state. Our trails, our state forests, our parks, our natural areas, all are open for the public to partake.
And speaking of websites, we've got a link to the DNR's COVID-19 webpage. You can find that at wpr.org/centraltime. Now, camping, of course, off the table right now. What kinds of activities are going on at state parks that people can still enjoy?
Again, fishing is certainly an opportunity. Hiking, birding, those types of quiet activities, most often done by, you know, a couple, three people or on your own, still allows us the solitude to quiet ourselves down, participate in outdoor recreation. And the calming effect of that, we believe, is what the doctor ordered specifically for times like this.
Now, I know some of the most popular state parks at their peak on a nice day, places like Devil's Lake, can be pretty hard to social distance. Are you doing things to make sure that some of the more popular parks don't end up at too high a capacity?
Absolutely. Again, our law enforcement will be making sweeps. I've asked staff to take pictures so that we can let staff know that they should be doing their periodic rounds, specifically on trails and in trails, and get out of the office and getting out of our trucks and reminding folks. And on occasion, we've had folks come to our restrooms. We do not want to close parks, nor do we want to close restrooms. We're just asking the visiting public to do the responsible thing and practice social distancing. And our goal here is there's enough space in some of our parks. You know, the granddaddy of them all, we have, you know, parks in the northern part of the state of Wisconsin. For those folks who live close to that, it's 236,000 acres. I could lose a whole city in 236,000 acres. And so I just want to remind folks, let's get out on the landscape, be careful, practice social distancing, and enjoy that park and all it has to offer.
We're talking about Wisconsin State Parks with Preston Cole, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gone out and visited any state parks since the Safer at Home order was put into place? Do you have a favorite state park or trail in your local area? Have you discovered some new parks, some new natural areas, a state or otherwise, in your own backyard since we're not traveling so far these days? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about Wisconsin state parks and trails. They are still open under Governor Evers' Safer at Home order, but the Department of Natural Resources is urging people to stay 6 feet apart and limit groups to fewer than 10. Preston Cole is our guest. He's the secretary of the Wisconsin DNR, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite state park or trail, especially one in your own part of the state, your local area? Have you gotten out to spend time at one since the Safer at Home order was put into place? What questions do you have about COVID-19 policies at state parks? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Hurley. Jeff, hello.
Yeah, I had a question. You're encouraging people to go and use the parks, but, you know, how about people like that are going to just disappear out of Milwaukee that are loaded with virus? They're going to be spreading that all over the county that's near me. To keep
Jeff,
them in their respective counties?
Jeff, thanks for the call. Now, you're encouraging people, Secretary Cole, not to travel, say, from Milwaukee to the area around Hurley. You're trying to get people to keep it local, it sounds like.
And again, the governor's order is to stay close to home, visit those parks and natural areas and state forests in your own backyard and your local jurisdiction or one city over. We appreciate, you know, the question that Jeff asked, which is, you know, people do worry, and we worry as well. And that's why we ask people to stay close to home in their own communities to visit these locations. And if there's not a state park in close proximity, many, if not all, local jurisdictions have a city park, a natural area, a boardwalk that offer the same opportunities in our cities, towns, and villages throughout the state of Wisconsin.
Thanks. Excuse me. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Jim with us.
Hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Jim?
Oh, well, first of all, thanks, Secretary Cole. Great having you on. Thanks, Rob, for doing this program very kindly. As spring approaches, we need to be outdoors. The balm for the soul, as they say. So I got a trip planned to Point Beach State Park on Lake Michigan shoreline, just north of Manitowoc and Two Rivers, my hometown. And it's for May 15, around then. What'll happen if I can't go there for the serenity of hearing the waves lap the shores and the sand dunes? What'll happen if I can't go in mid-May? How will that play out? What about people being reimbursed? Is there a game plan?
For those camping reservations, Jim?
10-4 camping reservations.
Okay, Secretary Cole, people who have existing reservations and don't know if they're going to be able to use them.
Correct. Again, the federal government has said they will reevaluate the process by which individuals move around the country by the end of April 30th, and that may provide us an opportunity to reevaluate what it all looks like after April 30th. And so the governor's order goes through April 30th, as well as the federal government. While his park reservation is scheduled in May, well, we will be paying very close attention to any future edicts that come our way that require us to remain in place and shelter here at our homes. That said, on occasion, the Department of Natural Resources may, in fact, issue a reimbursement relative to parks where something has occurred, a windstorm, a natural disaster of sorts. And so I would anticipate to pay very close attention to the DNR website. You can always call us. And again, we'll know more closer we get to the end of the month.
Thanks, Jim, for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to State DNR Secretary Preston Cole about state parks. They are open with some restrictions, no camping, for example, but they are encouraging people to get out and visit their parks, get out and enjoy the great outdoors. Secretary Cole, what are you doing to protect the workers, the employees in the park system to make sure they can do their jobs but stay safe all the while?
Well, certainly it's the PPE that we have. Hand washing. Many of our employees that aren't in the parks are working from home. So I would say somewhere around 80 to 85% of our employees around the state are working from home. However, where we have law enforcement on site and employees on site, they are to practice social distancing and use PPE to protect themselves in the workplace. And what that looks like is, well, we're not going to gather in the lunchroom. We will make sure that, you know, there may be one person per office associated with the work that they have to do. And as they make their rounds and on our state parks and trails and natural areas and state forests, our staff are uniquely aware of the challenges associated in our buildings and on our properties around social distancing. So we've advised them accordingly to not jeopardize their own health in our state park system, and they're following that edict as well for their own public safety.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Ken is with us in Delafield. Ken, hello.
Hello. I have a kind of a question, but what I've noticed is I live right near Lapham Peak, 200 yards off of Cushing Park Road. That is part of the Lapham Peak Trails. And they have these doggy bags for people to use to pick up after their dogs. A lot of the new influx of people coming out don't pick up after the dogs. And then the ones that do use the plastic bag, pick their dog's mess up, and just throw the bag on the trail. Then there's water bottles and just general garbage littering the trails now.
Ken, thanks a lot for the call. Secretary Cole, how are you encouraging people who are maybe new to the park system to be good stewards of the park system?
Well, again, quite frankly, Illinois has closed all of its parks, and so we do have individuals venturing into Wisconsin from Illinois. That said, our staff, while our garbage cans haven't been put out yet and our water hasn't been turned on in many of our facilities, and that's normal for us this time of year. We'll usually get those garbage cans, you know, in the month of April and May, heading from the southern part of the state to the northern part of the state as the weather tends to warm. And common sense says that people should be taking care of, you know, the enjoyment of our parks. On occasion, do we find individuals not doing that? Absolutely. So staff is ensuring that they do the early morning review of what the parks pick up litter that may be on the parks trails, and so that we can give folks surety that not only the enjoyableness of our parks from the walk, but just the visualness of taking in that beauty only gets harmed by individuals who don't follow the human code of picking up after themselves. And so I can appreciate the caller raising that particular issue. And so we have some responsibilities to get out on those park trails and clean up behind people should we have to.
Good message to leave us with, Secretary Cole. Thanks for joining us today.
thanks for having us, and get outdoors as much as we can. I think these are times that are uneasy for all of us. And so our hope is that the state park system can offer a bit of relief for some of the anxiety that Wisconsinites are having. And again, the governor put it in his edict, and we are going to live up to that code and do our best to make sure that folks have a safe and wonderful opportunity in our parks.
That's Secretary DNR Secretary Preston Cole. Life in Wisconsin has transformed since Governor Tony Evers declared a public health emergency on March 12th. Businesses are shuttered around the state while public health officials urge residents to stay home. But some business continues, including the filing of medical debt lawsuits against patients, Bram Sablesmith reports.
Blanche Jordan is taking social distancing seriously. When she's not at work as a caregiver at an assisted living facility near Milwaukee, she's at home, likely playing one of the games she has to pass the time. On Sunday night at 8 p.m., she was starting a 1,000-piece Game of Thrones puzzle on her living room floor.
And I get this doorbell, and, you know, I put my mask and stuff on, and I go to the door, and she gives me this paper and talking about you've been served. I'm like, what the hell?
Yes, someone showed up at her house on a Sunday evening during the pandemic with a stay-at-home order in effect to serve her with a $7,000 lawsuit from Frederick Hospital in Milwaukee.
This lady came to my door. She didn't have a mask on. She didn't have gloves. Not saying gloves would have made a difference, but unmasked. And she looking at me like I'm crazy because I got a whole mask across my face.
This is not the first time Jordan's incurred medical debt. Her bills from breast cancer treatment led her to declare bankruptcy in 2017. She's in remission now, by the way. Plus, she just paid off a different $5,000 debt to Frederick. That was for a hysterectomy she didn't realize would not be covered by her insurance.
I did give them my insurance card. They ran it.
But no one told her they did not accept it. Jordan thinks the new debt she's being sued over might be the remainder of the hysterectomy bill. But she says it's scary to get served during a pandemic. Yet, an analysis by WPR and Wisconsin Watch found at least 104 small claim suits filed by Wisconsin hospitals since March 12th, the day Governor Tony Evers declared a public health emergency. Jessica Roulette's an attorney with Legal Action of Wisconsin.
I think the COVID-19 pandemic has presented particular problems for collection of medical debt through the court system.
Roulette says there are practices in the court system that are at odds with public health best practices, like serving papers in person and statute of limitation deadlines to file lawsuits.
I would also hope that to some extent, the people who are owed money are able to show a little grace.
A spokesperson for Frederick says they suspended filing small claims suits on March 18th. Jordan's case was filed before that. But court records show at least 18 small claim suits have been filed on the hospital's behalf since then, including 15 yesterday. Spokespeople from UW Health, Gunderson, Aspirus, and Marshfield Clinic all told WPR they've suspended small claim suits during the pandemic. Ongoing suits like Jordan's are in a murkier area. Bobby Peterson is executive director of the public interest law firm ABC Health.
It's a disconnect between, you know, the hospital and the law firms that they've retained to pursue these issues.
He says hospitals need to do a better job of communicating their policies to those law firms. Getting sued by a hospital over an unpaid medical bill is stressful under even normal circumstances. This pandemic, Peterson says, is a whole new ballgame.
We're seeing massive amounts of dislocated workers who are losing their jobs and in many cases their health insurance coverage.
Meanwhile, Blanche Jordan's day in court has been postponed due to the new coronavirus. She says it's frustrating.
Which is it? Do you want to sue me or do you want to wait?
For now, she'll keep staying home, likely playing games to pass the time. Unless she's at work at the assisted living facility near Milwaukee. Bram Sablesmith, Wisconsin Public Radio.
That story comes from a partnership between WPR and Wisconsin Watch. We'll have more on COVID-19 and the healthcare system that's coming up tomorrow on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. It's the morning show. Tomorrow at 6, get some cooking advice for making the most of the ingredients you have on hand if you don't want to run to the store for that one special thing. That's tomorrow at 6 on the morning show. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then a nutritionist shares some information about eating healthy while we're under stay-at-home restrictions. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network.